Chapter 10. A few minutes later, the path opens into a clearing. There's a large building there, constructed out of dark wood with white trim. There are a lot of lights shining from the windows. Stiles is sure that anyone who somehow wound up on this road would probably assume that it was some sort of lodge or hotel. The clearing is mostly grass, neatly trimmed, although he sees a garden off to one side. He supposes that it probably helps the residents to have something productive to do with their time. Gwen walks through the small yard and up onto the porch, which has several comfortable-looking chairs and a small table or two. Rather than knocking, she simply presses the flat of her palm against the door. Stiles sees Jackson give the door an interested look and assumes that magic is taking place, although he can't sense it. Then Gwen twists the knob and lets them in. Dr. Mulrooney! They're greeted by a dark-skinned man who's bouncing on the heels of his feet. Dr. Mulrooney, people are trying to get us! They're trying to get inside! We're not safe here! We need to evacuate! Tayshaun, we're going to be just fine, Gwen says, with a reassuring smile. The people here would never let any harm come to you. We've talked about that, remember? But there's people trying to get in, he says. And we're going to stop them. Gwen reaches out and gives his shoulder a squeeze. Where's Lorelai? Upstairs, Tayshaun says. In the library. Okay, why don't you go find Carla, okay? I'm sure she's upset. You can help her feel safe, right, Tayshaun? Okay, Dr. Mulrooney, the young man says, and trots off. This way, Gwen says to Stiles, and they head through the dining area and down a hallway. A few other residents stop and gawk at the pack of wolves, but Gwen is always ready with a few reassuring words or a smile. They go up a set of stairs and into a library that's even bigger than the one Stiles and the others keep at the den. Lorelai is standing at the front window, her back straight and stiff. How bad is it? Gwen greets her. Lorelai turns to them. Her gaze sweeps over the group, lingers on Stiles for a minute, and then focuses on Gwen. She'll get through eventually, Lorelai says. She's quite strong. But we've got time. I haven't ordered the evacuation yet, but I will if you think it would be better for the residents. I think they'll be okay as long as we keep them away from the windows, Gwen says. I assume you know exactly what they're after? Lorelai asks. Gwen nods. At the Kansas facility, you had a sorcerer named Cameron Marley. I know him, Lorelai says, with a return nod. Not your patient, is he? No. I've talked to him a couple of times, but he's been catatonic the entire time you've had him. Well, the reason for that is that he isn't actually Cameron Marley. He had summoned up a demon, and the warlock who defeated him put the demon in his body and left Cameron's soul hanging out in the ether. Lorelai frowns briefly, but then gestures for Gwen to go on. Long story short, Cameron Marley is possessing Naomi, Gwen says, with the help of the original warlock's daughter. I'll probably require a longer story at some point, but that's enough to go on for now, Lorelai replies. I presume Cameron would like his body back before his soul dissipates entirely, she adds, and Gwen nods. Very well, let's go give it to him. There's one other thing, Gwen says. How's Abby feeling today? As well as she ever is. Why? Gwen lets out a breath. We need to take her binding off. She's the only one here who will be able to stop Sally. Stiles frowns. Who's Abby? Gwen waves him off. Lorelai is frowning. Gwen, are you sure? She asks. Yeah, Gwen says. There's a moment of tense silence, and then Lorelai nods. Then let's do it. Should we? Stiles says awkwardly, as Lorelai turns to head out of the library. Why don't you stay here? Gwen says. You've had a long night. You guys can keep an eye on the front. Lorelai will know if Sally gets through. Okay, Stiles says. Lorelai has barely looked at him, but he figures he's probably happier that way. And to be honest, he has no problem with staying up here, away from the action. If Lorelai has some ideas about how to handle Sally and Cameron, he's 100% okay with not being included. In fact, once Lorelai and Gwen have left the room, he sits down on the floor and pulls Derek down beside him. Derek settles down without complaint, and Stiles crawls into his lap, letting Derek wrap his arms around him. The other wolves curl up around him. He feels ridiculously safe, given that Sally is actively trying to break into the house he's sitting in. "What happened?" Derek asks quietly. In order to get Gwen to cough up Oblivion's location, Sally decided to ruin all her hard work, Stiles says, hoping that if he's flippant enough about this, he might not throw up. When Derek looks at him with that judgy eyebrow expression, Stiles says, "She buried me in a coffin, in the ground." "Jesus Christ," Derek says. Several of the wolves whine and crowd closer to him. If my estimates of time are accurate, it took less than 30 minutes and some choice words from your fucking uncle to reduce me to a gibbering mess, Stiles says, and sighs. So much for the power of positive thinking. Stiles, I'm pretty sure being buried alive would reduce anyone to a gibbering mess, Derek says, combing his fingers through Stiles' hair. What did Peter say? Stiles scowls, because just remembering what Peter did pissed him off. He thought I should just give in at the 30-minute mark and start screaming, because, and I quote, I was going to break anyway, so why not just get it over with? And when I didn't want to do that, he started saying the sort of thing he said just before he put me in his trunk, to freak me out. What a dick. Lydia feels it necessary to shift back into her human form, just to deliver this opinion of Peter's behavior. Yeah. Stiles feels the queasiness start to choke him off again. He closes his eyes and takes several deep breaths. On the one hand, it did work incredibly well. I had a total mental breakdown, most of which I don't even remember, which apparently did get Gwen to give up the location, which in turn got me out of the ground. But I still want to wring his neck. You're welcome, Peter says without bothering to appear. Shut your dick, holster, Stiles replies. Peter's only response is a snort of laughter. Derek rubs slowly at Stiles' back and says, I agree that it was a completely dickish thing to do, but I don't think he did it for the reasons you think he did, he says, and it wasn't about his opinion of you, it was his opinion of us. Meaning? Lydia asks. Stiles, I assume you agree that eventually you would have broken down, right? Derek asks. I mean, shit, anyone would. He doesn't stop that soothing motion on Stiles' back as he speaks. But you resisted because you knew we were looking for you. You figured if you could hold out, we would find you. And if you could keep it together until then, Sally wouldn't get the location out of Gwen. You had faith in us. But Peter doesn't. Peter only thinks about what he can do in any given moment. Or, since he's now stuck in your head, what you can do. Peter doesn't wait to be rescued. We would have figured out you were in Fairy, Lydia says, her voice somewhat tart and irritated. But then she admits. But it would have taken a while, probably. I don't even think it's that Peter thinks poorly of us, Derek says. He's self-reliant. He was always that way. I guess you're right, Stiles says. I mean, you're definitely right in that I was waiting for a rescue, and that I would have by far found that preferable to letting Sally see me break down. Lydia looks around and frowns slightly. If we're done psychoanalyzing your dead uncle, she says, does anyone know where Jackson went? Everyone looks around, including the wolves. Jackson is nowhere to be seen. He must have gone with Gwen and Lorelai, Stiles says, feeling somewhat uneasy about this. Jackson still has Marzana sitting on his shoulder, and Marzana was chomping at the metaphorical bit to get to Jinky Ninky. Stiles doesn't know exactly what Lorelai has planned for Cameron Marley's body, but he's pretty sure that kicking Jikininki out of it was part of the deal. You know what? I don't care. If he's gone to get Marzana a snack, more the power to him.
By all accounts, Jikininki is a pretty bad demon, Derek says. I guess we'll take Marzana any day, huh?
If Marzana wins, Lydia says. I wouldn't take any other odds, Stiles says. Fair.
Lydia stands up and walks over to the window. She stands there for a minute, while Stiles continues to cuddle with wolves, feeling his pulse even out.
Something's happening, she says, and it immediately skyrockets. Derek growls a little, but helps Stiles back to his feet and over to the window. Stiles looks out to see Lorelai carrying a man outside. It's the same man they met in Kansas, presumably Cameron Marley. She sets him down on the ground and then backs up several paces. Stiles jumps as he hears footsteps on the stairs, but it's only Gwen. She comes over to the window with them.
What did Lorelai do? Stiles asks.
Well, she exorcised the demon, Gwen says, so that's an empty body. Then she put some spells on that empty body that would make it an extremely bad idea for anyone to come home to roost.
Do you think Cameron will know? Derek asks.
I'm not sure Cameron will care, Gwen says. His time is running out, and he knows it. Better to try to fight off whatever Lorelai did to his body than to keep trying to survive in Naomi's.
Lorelai, standing behind Cameron, is making some complicated hand gestures.
All right, she says a moment later. Here's what you came for. I'll be having my sister back now.
What's she doing? Stiles asks.
She's taking down the outer barriers, Gwen says. No point in standing around for hours while we wait for Sally and Cameron to break through.
They'd be more tired when they got here, Derek says.
It'll be fine, Gwen says. Her face is calm, blank, almost remote. Stiles wonders exactly what plan she and Lorelai cooked up, but he finds that he doesn't really care. Whatever it is, it came from the minds of two of the strongest and smartest people he knows. If Gwen says they have the situation under control, he'll believe her without reservations.
Naomi's body floats into the clearing. Cameron is clearly still using telekinesis to control it.
Back up! He shouts at Lorelai.
She does as she's told.
Like Gwen, she looks calm, but Stiles can see the rage in her face in the way she clenches her jaw.
Cameron comes forward and kneels down in front of his long-lost body for several minutes.
You've done magic on me, he says.
Lorelai says nothing.
Undo it, Cameron says. All of it, now.
Why should I?
Lorelai asks.
You obviously can't hurt my sister if you're dependent on her body.
There are plenty of other people here we can hurt, Cameron says.
Lorelai stares him down for a minute, but then nods. She places her hand on Cameron's shoulder and closes her eyes. She stays that way for several long minutes that tick by with agonizing slowness. Stiles is practically going out of his mind from waiting. He wants to do something. Finally, Lorelai removes her hand and steps away again.
All yours, she says.
Moments later, Naomi collapses into a heap. Lorelai moves forward to catch her, and they sag to the ground together. Then Cameron stands up in his own body, his eyes fever bright and face excited.
Yes, he hisses, holding his hands out and clenching and unclenching his fists. Jikininki, he shouts, and even without magic, Stiles can see the effect of the demon settling back onto Cameron's shoulder. The patch of grass he's standing in starts to wither and die, and through the open window, Stiles can smell a faint stench, like rotten meat. Kill her!
Lorelai holds one arm up to protect herself and Naomi, and the clash of magic creates a rippling shockwave that rocks the building on its foundations. Before Cameron can do anything else, Lorelai and Naomi are gone.
Come out and fight, you cowards!
Cameron shouts, or are you afraid of my demon?
The temperature starts to drop. Frost appears on the grass, on the edges of the windows. Styles finds that he can see his breath.
Oh, shit, Lydia says. Nobody's afraid of your demon, you little pissant,
Jackson says, stepping off the porch.
Your demon is a pathetic waste of space, just like you.
Fuck you, Cameron retorts. Jackson rolls his eyes. Anyway, what's your beef with Oblivion? They kept your fucking body safe for the last 20 years. Shouldn't you be a little more pissed at Sally for keeping you in a jar?
I'll deal with her when I'm done, Cameron says with a sneer. My demon and I can handle anything she can throw at me.
Like you handled what her father threw at you? Jackson gives a snort.
You're way out of your league, jackass. You got what you wanted. Pack up, go home, and you might actually survive to enjoy it.
What I'm going to enjoy is beating the shit out of you.
Sure, buddy, Jackson says.
He raises his hand and makes a flicking motion. Cameron goes flying backwards and slams into a tree. Moments later, a wave of that stench rolls over the clearing. Several of the wolves gag, and Styles hastily throws the window shut. Jackson seems unaffected. Actually, he looks annoyed. He just shakes his head and says, "Go get it, Marzana."
Later, Styles thinks that a fight between two demons was actually much less exciting than he would have anticipated.
They're creatures of energy, not of physical matter, so their blows can only be seen in flashes of light and rumbles of thunder. Some of the trees break and crash to the ground. The temperature fluctuates rapidly. It's interesting in an academic sort of way, but not the movie-making material he would have anticipated.
Cameron stays at the edge of the clearing, shouting orders and obscenities. Jackson doesn't move an inch from right where he is, except to occasionally rub his nails against his shirt or give an irritated sigh. The only time he speaks is when he shouts, "Stop playing with your food, Marzana! We don't have all day!"
There's a crack of thunder so loud that the wolves cringe, covering their ears with their paws. Ice coats everything in the clearing, and the cold snap is so vicious that Styles involuntarily flinches away from it. There's a buildup of tension in the air, almost electric, and Styles sees that all his hair is standing on end. Then, abruptly, it's gone. The clearing is green and bathed in the dim dawn light that filters through the trees. Everything is quiet and still. And although the temperature is still a little on the chilly side, it's nothing compared to the wintry blast of a few moments previous.
Jikininki? Cameron asks, and for the first time, the bravado is gone from his voice.
God damn, that was satisfying, Jackson says, his head lolling back, eyes closed like he just had an orgasm.
Holy shit, I can see why people think having a demon is dangerous.
You son of a bitch! Cameron screams, launching himself forward.
Jackson slaps him down without moving a muscle. Cameron goes flying backwards and lands hard on the dirt. He rolls several times and then fetches up against Sally's feet.
I have to do everything myself, Sally says with a loud, melodramatic sigh.
She offers Cameron a hand up. He accepts it. She brushes the dirt off his shoulders and gives his cheek a comforting pat.
Think you're gonna make it, bucko? She asks.
I'm fine, Cameron snaps.
Pity,
Sally says, and thrusts a knife into his stomach. Cameron makes a choked noise, sagging against her. Sally shoves him away. He lands on the ground, curling up around the wound.
Styles did warn you, Cameron, Sally says. I never let anyone live after they've seen my... Oh, you're dead already, aren't you? Nobody ever lets me finish.
Jesus Christ, Styles mutters. He doesn't feel any pity for Cameron, but to have died so quickly meant that Sally had stabbed him in the abdominal artery. He supposes it shouldn't be a surprise to him that Sally is good with a knife, but he can't help but recoil.
Jackson!
Sally says, stepping over Cameron's body and twirling the knife around her fingers.
I suppose this was always meant to be, wasn't it? The daughter and the protege.
Of course, he wouldn't have needed you if he'd had me, but I'm eager to see what he taught you.
He taught me not to start fights I can't finish, Jackson says.
Sally smiles. He taught me that, too.
Sally, is that you?
Everyone stops and turns to look at the new voice entering the conversation. There's a woman standing on Oblivion's front steps. It's hard to guess her age. Her skin is smooth, but her blonde hair is heavily salted with gray. She's wearing a nightgown and has bare feet, and is completely devoid of makeup. Styles' gaze snaps back to Sally, but he sees no recognition there. Her face has that blank, questioning look on it she gets when a new variable enters an equation.
Sally,
the woman says, and walks forward with her arms held out in front of her. Tears are streaming down her cheeks.
My dear, sweet daughter, I thought I'd never see you again. I thought I would never get this chance.
What? Sally says, and stands there in surprise as the woman embraces her. She doesn't return the hug, but she doesn't fight back either. She just stands there with a does-not-compute look on her face.
Oh, Sally, I love you so much, the woman says, hugging her and sobbing. I've missed you. Every day I've missed you. I hated missing you so much. I never had a chance. He made me have you. He forced me to love you. I love you, Sally. I love you. I hated loving you. I hate it so much.
What is happening? Derek asks in a low voice, but Styles' gaze is fixed on the drama unfolding in the clearing.
Let me go, Sally says, and tries to push the woman away.
It doesn't work. She tries harder, but her mother just clutches at her, and Sally can't seem to get free.
What are you doing? Let me go!
He took you away from me, the woman says. I couldn't stand it. He made me love you. It's his fault. He didn't understand.
Understand what? Let me go, you crazy old woman!
Sally says, still struggling.
That I have to kill you, her mother says. That I would have to kill you if I was ever going to have peace again.
Sally makes a sharp gesture with one hand, and Styles sees something forming in it. It looks like a little black hole, a vortex.
No, honey, don't do that.
The woman's hand closes over Sally's, pressing her fist back together, and there's a little pop as the spell dissipates before it can form.
It's going to be okay, my love, my darling, my beautiful daughter. It's finally going to be okay.
Sally has stopped struggling. She's standing there with wide eyes. The knife has dropped from her hand. Her mouth is moving, but no sound is coming out. It takes Styles a minute to realize that she's choking, that her mother is doing some sort of spell that keeps her from breathing. Sally's hand claws at her throat, claws at her mother's face. It doesn't make any difference.
Shh,
the woman murmurs, barely audible, and starts to sing.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word.
Somehow, Sally manages to rip free of her grasp. Her eyes dart around like a cornered animal, and then she turns tail and runs. She's barely taken two steps when she disappears. She opened a way right in front of herself and vanished through it. The woman stands there for a long moment, still humming quietly. Then she shrugs and says,
"Next time, I suppose."
With a sigh, she turns and shuffles back into the building.
"What the actual fuck just happened?"
Styles blurts out. Gwen is standing with her eyes closed. It seems to take her a minute to find her voice.
"We are safe now," she says. "If you'll excuse me, I'd like to check on Lorelai and Naomi."
"I'm going with you," Styles says,
and Gwen gives him a somewhat exasperated look, but doesn't outright argue. The wolves trot down the stairs after him, and they find Lorelai and Naomi in what looks like a living room. There are several large sofas and chairs, a television, stacks of games and books. Lorelai has gotten Naomi settled into one of the armchairs and is kneeling in front of her, smoothing down her hair. Instantly, Styles wishes that he hadn't gone with Gwen. This is an intimate moment, and he has no right to see it. He ushers the wolves back into the kitchen and wonders if Lorelai will mind if he raids the refrigerator. Dinner was a long time ago now. Jackson has clearly already had the same thought, and in fact, his entire front half is in the pantry. He comes out of it with his hand in a box of cereal.
"Hey,"
he says with his mouth full. Danny gives a wolfish little huff and pushes his head against Jackson's thigh. "Yeah, whatever, you big baby," Jackson says.
"You okay?"
Styles asks him. "Dude, I'm better than okay," Jackson says. Then he sees the look on Styles' face and rolls his eyes dramatically.
"Don't look so fucking worried. Not about to go on a murder spree. Marzana getting a demonic snack was awesome, but it's not like I'll have the opportunity for it to happen often. Keep your pantyhose on."
Styles raises his hands in surrender and then says, "Is that Cinnamon Toast Crunch? Hand it over, man." They wind up sitting around with bowls of cereal. The wolves are naked and nobody seems to care, except Jackson, who's trying very hard not to look at Lydia. She rolls her eyes at him, but doesn't comment. Instead, she asks, "Did you see where Sally's mother went?"
"Yeah," Jackson says. "She came wandering in and curled up in a corner in a room down the hall. I let Wilma stay with her. She gets upset when she sees people crying. Likes to help out."
Styles had been wondering where Jackson's familiar had gone. He's caring less and less as the moments go by. Mostly what he cares about right now is the cereal. Then he might care about a nap. He hopes that Sally is done with this bullshit. Cameron and his demon have been dealt with, so that's a plus. But he still needs a long-term plan for Jonas. If Sally slinks back to Massachusetts to lick her wounds, he might get some peace and quiet until the conclave. He's starting to nod off into his cereal when Gwen walks in. She looks calm and collected, just a little tired.
"I'm guessing that you have questions for me," she says, and gestures for him to go with her. "Now's your chance."